Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 49 for July 18th, 2007. Hide a pod, now with optional squirt module. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, episode 49. We're almost to our 50th, which means we're very close to, you know, this might even be our anniversary since I think we missed a few. Do you remember when we first started this, Alex? You started it.
I think it was very close to a year ago. I think we've only missed a couple, you know, a handful of them. So,
well, let me see. I can go to twit.tv/mbw1 and see. Our first episode was August 12th. So it was a WWDC episode with Amber, David Pogue, Chris Breen, Alex Lindsay, and Leo Laporte. No Scott Bourne.
No, I wasn't invited to the party till late.
Really? I didn't know that. You seem like a part of it.
I came, I started by filling in for you.
Oh, yeah, episode 2.
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but you were. And then you were there for episode 3. I wasn't there, but you were.
Mm-hmm.
And then, not that this is of any interest to anybody, but anyway, we're here now, and that's what really matters.
I distinctly remember being told how badly I sucked compared to you, which was very invigorating.
Oh, you don't read those comments, do you?
Not really, no.
You know, I went through a little snit fit last week where I turned off the comments. I was just getting so frustrated. And then I realized you can't turn off comments. You just don't have to read them.
Yeah.
Well, what I feel like people go to the website, for some reason they found it or heard about it, and they go to the website and they say, oh, this is cool, look at all these podcasts. They click on a link and they read the comments. This show's the worst show ever. This show sucks. Never listen to this show. And it's like, well, come on, I shouldn't really probably put that on the front page. Maybe bury that in the forum somewhere. So constructive criticism, gang. That's all we ask.
My favorites are when something goes wrong and it doesn't get into the feed, and it's like people are clutching for oxygen.
I know, they're like dying. In a way, that's good. I mean, I want them to
seriously
feel.
Seriously, Leo, where? It's sweet, though. That means, you know what that means? That's a first world problem, Leo. That means people are emotionally engaged with what you do.
But when, like, I'm looking at Twit 105, and the very first comment you see is boring. Ugh. I think this episode has made it as the second worst Twit. See, that to me, you know, that's not going to really encourage people to listen. And by the way,
did you see the article in the New York Times magazine this weekend about Threadless? Maybe it was last week, but there's an interesting article about Threadless and about how they pick the t-shirts. And one of the things that factors into the shirts that they decide to buy or that they decide to run are not just the ones that get all fives. They look for ones that get a huge number of fives and a huge number of zeros. Yeah. And that's how they know that they're going to make some kind of a connection.
You want to piss people off. You want to have them emotional. So screw you. I hate you too. I hate this. You are the worst audience ever. See, maybe we can really get them angry. And then, no, that doesn't work.
Be sure
either.
To identify yourself, Leo, while you're going through this.
And write to Scott Bourne, because it's his fault.
Well, you'll fix all this in post, right, Leo? You'll take
yeah,
most
I always
out.
Do that. You know that. Yeah, I just edited it all out.
You're good about that, fixing in post. Yeah.
So now Andy is not here, so we could speak freely about this. Is Andy Iannocco the fake Steve?
He could be. He's got the
fake
the
Steve is such a good writer.
Yeah.
Well, and Andy is a very, very, very good writer, and Andy's very, very funny.
And he knows the subject matter.
So here's but the deal. The Sightning blog says it's because he has an IP address in Boston.
Exactly.
Where Andy is.
And goodness knows that there's only one IP address in all of Boston.
Well, I could find out what Andy's IP address is. That would be easy.
Well, don't you think that Andy's smart enough that if it's him, he's going to mask his IP address?
Absolutely. I don't think it is Andy. I have to say, I mean, having read, I love Fake Steve, but it's and he's very funny, but it is not Andy's finely tuned wit, to be honest with you.
Well, do we really care? I mean, we're enjoying it. Who cares? It's sort of like, you know, who cares who the Macalope is? We like the Macalope.
We'll never know who the Macalope is.
Well, it's going to be a lot easier now because I have spies sitting outside the front door at CNET every day.
He's got to get his check someday.
And they're going to wait for a guy that walks in with antlers, and we're going to say, busted.
So Fake Steve is fakesteve.blogspot.com. Well worth reading. I don't think it's Andy. It's somebody in Boston, perhaps, but I don't think it's Andy.
Some people think it's Merlin.
We thought the Macalope was you until we saw you in the same place.
I think any kind of slightly funny anonymous thing might seem to be me. But if it's not particularly funny, it might be me. Yeah.
The slightly funny anonymous thing. You mean 43 folders?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I write in the Merlin persona there, sure.
There you go.
I mean, that guy's a douche. Obviously, I'm not really like that.
Clearly. So, it's been a while since we've talked. iPhone, any updates? Scott Bourne, you still love it?
I still love it.
Merlin Mann, you still hate it?
I don't hate it. I don't have it. I watched my friend today downtown trying to, he was pinching, trying to find the restaurant that we were looking for, and the Edge network was not being friendly. But
I think we all can safely say we all hate Edge.
But, I prefer Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I guess I would say that it's better than nothing, but not much.
Not much.
You know, it is nice that there's something available when I'm not around a Wi-Fi. I was in New Mexico about 10 days ago and needing to find where I was in the middle of nowhere, and was able to, not in the middle of nowhere, but in an area that wasn't going to have Wi-Fi. And it was very useful to have the Edge, even if it was slow, because otherwise
true.
I'd still be driving.
True. Hey, can you remove your muff?
It's gone. There's no muff.
There's no muff? You sound muffled.
Hold on. How's that?
That's all right. You sound a little muffled.
Does that sound better?
Pop a P for me.
P-P-P-P-P-P.
See, he's got the muff on. There ain't no popping.
Muff on. There's no
muff.
You're
just a good non-pee puffer. So, no, you're right. It is better than nothing, but just barely. It's so hard. You know, part of the problem is you can do so much so quickly on that thing that you can overtax it. For instance, the more I use it, the more I love this. The way they handle tabbing in Safari, where you can open multiple pages. But it's a great temptation then to open multiple pages. It doesn't seem to, and we talked about this last week, it doesn't seem to cache them, which drives me crazy.
No. The thing that I'd really love to see is especially with the Google Maps, I'd love to be able to say, I want to give you a gigabyte of my hard drive space or 500 megs of my hard drive space for maps so that I can, when I'm surfing around looking for the area
save it, keep it there. Cache it.
You know, so that I can actually... you know, find it again really, really quickly when I'm on the road, and that way I don't have to deal with Edge. I wouldn't feel Edge as much because the number one thing I use the Edge for is when I'm somewhere and I need a map.
Right. That's exactly right. Scott, why we thought there'd be an update before now, yes?
Yeah, but turns out that they've discovered 68 repeatable bugs. So I think that they might have decided that they might as well catch them. Now, most of these are the kind of bugs that you can I can prove there's a bug here, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect in any way.
Cosmetic or, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that number from Apple?
That number is from applehound.com, and the guy there did a pretty scientific approach, and I tested him to see if he was just a hater or if he was a guy that really wanted to help. And he had sent the bug list to Apple, which made me think he was pretty accurate. And we were able to repeat most of them here, although I was not able to duplicate all of them. But I'm just guessing here, but I know that they, if you remember back to the pre-launch talk, everybody was, you're going to have to do a firmware update right in the store. Remember that conversation?
Yeah, not so.
Not so, and I think where that came from, though, is that they were aware that there was some stuff that needed to be fixed, but they used the Guy Kawasaki method, which is, it's okay to ship crap.
Oh, and that's a strong word. It's not.
It's a very strong word.
There's nothing crappy here. I haven't found any bugs that make me go, gosh.
No, but using that to illustrate the point that they just decided to go ahead and go with it, and they'll fix it. And we know it'll be coming. It's just a matter of what day.
I keep looking. I keep hoping because there's features I know they're going to add. I just, you know, it's not that I want bug fixes. I just want to see some new features.
How about iChat? Will that make you happy?
Would make me very happy.
Okay, well, just hold on.
We also know that Leopard will bring some features like syncing to-do lists, syncing notepad, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I think
there's going to be the special Laporte fix.
I don't know if they'll fix that. You know, I think people are making me think I'm crazy because, I mean, at least 3/4 of my mail now is saying, I can type Laporte. Andy Anaco has just sent me an email that said Laporte, 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 Laporte. sent from my iPhone. Laporte. I know you could type Laporte. I'm not saying you can't type Laporte. I'm just saying it's a little harder. Some words, the words that aren't in the dictionary. I guess what's happening, and you confirm this, right, Scott, is it shrinks the keys for letters it doesn't think you really want to type at this point.
That's right. And in the same space, it increases the size of the letters it thinks that you want to type. So it's trying to help you.
Yeah.
And we've all gotten together. We're starting a blog where we're going to suggest different names you might change your
name. Thank you. Yeah, because Laporte's not working. So I'm going to I like the iPhone so much, I'm changing my name.
There's times when we all have to adapt to the technology.
Well, and that's what I've learned is that, you know, we all thought the computer should adapt to humans. Wrong.
What about Leo QWERTY? Have you thought about that?
That's how I became, you know, that's how I became Alex.
Really?
It was because of technology. Yeah, my entire childhood, I was known as Ben.
Come on.
No, I was
Don't
Ben.
Do that to me, man. You're twisting my mind.
You freak me out, Alex. You totally freak me out.
And what happened was is that when I got to college, all the computer program, all the computer stuff with my name on it all came up as Alexander Lindsay. So when the teacher asked, what do you want to be called? And I'd say Ben, and they'd get confused, and they would never remember. And so then I just changed it to Alex. I went by my because it was my Ben's my middle name.
Wow!
So that was me changing my name to fit into technology. I just want to show that as a good example for you, Leo.
Dude,
it can't be done.
Your real name is Ben.
My middle name is Ben.
Dude,
I had no idea.
If I go home, everyone knows me as Ben.
In fact, I'm pretty sure that Alex was the inspiration for that famous Michael Jackson hit.
Ben, you know I'm leaving. It's funny because my name is Unkinglobot, but I stopped using that because the professors in college, same thing. They'd say or Ingink, and it was just
that one time they said, if you'd like to be called something different, let us know. And you said, I'm sick of the click language. Please,
Leo,
call me QWERTY.
QWERTY, Leo QWERTY. That's my new name.
Call me QWERTY.
And call me QWERTY. And now you know we're going to call Alex Ben from now on.
I'm so going to call you Ben now.
It gets confusing in the office because we already have a Ben.
Ben's also the creepy guy on Lost.
Yeah.
By the way, haven't we long gone past the point at which the rat hole music should be playing?
Long gone. No, this is relevant. This has to do with typing on the iPhone. Checking.
Yeah,
and a study from Mac Daily News, actually this published by Mac Daily News, according to Interpret, probably not how it's pronounced, but
I think it's Interpret.
Interpret.
I think it's Entrepret.
The iPhone is going to be a catalyst for mobile video growth because 63% of iPhone users have already used the widescreen-enabled device to watch video compared to 28% of regular cell phone users. And a little more than half of iPhone users have watched YouTube on their phone. I'm guilty on both counts. 46% have watched a music video. Can't say I've done that. 34% have watched the news. What news? What do you mean watch the news? I don't know what they're talking about. There's no live stuff on there. Is there news on YouTube?
And you can watch replays of news.
Yeah, I guess you could. I have the 60 Minutes podcast on there. I guess that qualifies. And although it's audio. And 32% have already watched a movie trailer. Yeah, it's a you know what? I show when people there's certain things you do when you do an iPhone demo. The first thing I do is the photo album and I've got it all down now. You do the photo album, they love the you know, you flick it with a finger and then you get to a picture that's not portrait mode. Or so you turn the thing and suddenly it's landscape. They go, ooh. And then I flip again and then I say, wait a minute, I can't quite see who that is. And I do the pinch. And they go, ooh. And then I say, let me show you video. So that's right, really high up in that demo thing. Because they love it. The video looks great.
It does.
I almost got sold last night. I was at dinner and my friend whipped out his iPhone and handed it to me. And he had told me he was going to do this. He's ripped the entire first season of HR Puffin Stuff and has it on his iPhone. So I sat there and watched the intro, and it looked beautiful.
Oh, that's good.
It took Sid and Marty Croft to almost sell me.
I will say that also, if you're looking for things that look really, really good on your iPhone, the Johnny Quest looks exceptional on your iPhone.
If they ever put bananas on at large on there, it's all over for me. I have on there a Japanese. Actually, it's really great. Sean Carruthers up in Toronto or Vancouver now, who's a kind of a connoisseur. You would like Sean. You know Sean
Murray. I know Sean.
Yeah, both
love
of you know Sean.
Love
He's
Sean.
A connoisseur of the obscure, the weird, the Japanese. He has a DVD of some Japanese kids show, Gong Gong Suichi, that.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing!
You've seen these?
We were watching it on the set last week.
Oh, that's right. It's Rube Goldberg like marble domino machines, and I guess they use them as bumpers in this show. And he gave me the DVD, and I put it on my iPhone, and it's a great demo because it's a very detailed. You want to see the details of what's going on, and you can see it beautifully on the screen.
They should really podcast those or something because
they should. They're great. There's hundreds of them.
Yeah, there's hundreds of them, and they're so amazing. I mean, it's a little. It seems low tech, but very, very cool.
First of all, Toichi. And now, even though I've never been to Japan, I'm singing that song. I can't only speak Japanese, so it works.
Practice saying wakarimasen.
I think that one of the other things that's going to be interesting about the video is that because we're spending so much time clicking on the screen, and of course, this is the thing that I pay attention to, is because we're spending so much time clicking on the screen and we're watching video, the idea of interactive video, I think, becomes more and more relevant.
It'll be good for you, won't it?
Yeah, because I think that, as you start to be able to wire that in, you're going to be able to really be able to click on a lot of the stuff that you're interested in. And because we're doing it so much with the apparatus that we have, I think we're more likely to jump on that. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting situation as that starts to move forward.
I think the iPhone haters are really going to hate this, but I really do think that we are. And this is the point of that interpret study, is that it's going to change the way people use phones. And I think the iPhone is going to be that kind of landmark device that you were saying, Scott Bourne, where it really is going to change how people think about their, it won't be a phone. It'll be a thing, their computer in their pocket.
And one of the things that I thought was really interesting, I was talking to someone last week about this, that one of the things we noticed was how much of our phone we're actually using, how much of the iPhone. I mean, my old phones, I spent a lot of money on a Trio and when it first came out, and barely used any of the features. Yeah. And I use most of what the iPhone does almost on a daily basis. And I think part of that is, of course, that the interface is great and all that stuff. But I think a key part of it is that Apple spent so much time on all these videos before we bought the phone, that by the time we picked the phone up, we already knew where everything was and how to click on it and what to do. And I think that beyond whether the iPhone is good or not, I think overall for electronic makers, I mean, I think a lot of times we get these things and we never use them because we don't know where to go and we never have time to make that work. I think that was a really, really strong move by Apple to put out a 20 or 30 minute movie about how to use it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a phone. I think it's a computer.
Yeah, I think that's the point, really. It's a phone, certainly, and a good phone. But I'm kind of, the email's growing on me. I'm using that a lot. The video.
Well, you know, the model for the usability was Merlin's That Phone Guy. They wanted something as easy as an imaginary phone.
Well, for reasons I'm sure you can understand, I can't go into a lot of detail on that. But there were discussions about form factor. We drilled down on some things. Can I ask a question to you fanboys? What are you doing? How are you tracking tasks? Have we talked about this already?
It has no to-do capabilities, and it drives me crazy.
Are you using web apps? Or are you using like a text file kind of thing?
There is a way to do to-dos. It's kind of kludgy. But what I do is I have a contact I call to-do. And then I type stuff in there, and then it syncs with my computer as an address. And then I'm able to look at that when I sync and pull those out and drop them into my regular to-do.
And you could use Remember the Milk or other to-do list sites. But, you know, Jot is good for this as well. And that's something you turned us on to, Merlin.
So, but I mean, you do need...
There's something missing.
Well, sure.
I will call Jot. I will use Jot, but and then I'll have Jot go to my Yahoo mailbox.
Well, and I have to say, I mean, just to... be the minority opinion on this one thing. I think that the excuse or the explanation that, oh gosh, don't worry, it's coming in Leopard, it's all going to be integrated, blah, blah, blah.
And we know that for a fact because it's Leopard Mail has to do in it.
Yeah, it does. But I'm just curious though, because I talked about this a little bit on the site. There's some pretty good solutions out there, like people are using, but there are a lot of them are, wireless or that, they're.
Yeah, you have to use a website. Yeah,
internet connectivity.
Like Remember the Milk or something. I agree with you. It's not a good solution. I'm very reliant on
the notes functionality is pretty perfunctory, right? It's pretty basic.
It's real basic.
It's like a Palm memo pad kind of functionality. Yeah.
Which is adequate. I'm not. That's okay if it would sync. I don't know why it doesn't sync to stickies.
It's an oversight, and it should have been built in. And you got to imagine there was some reason they didn't include it. But I agree. It's something that I wish it had.
Simple thing. And then you'd put a to-do list in stickies, and it would automatically sync. And
I realize part of that is the color of my crystal. It's the kind of thing that it would.
Well, that's
be,
your thing, of course.
That's my thing. Is contextual access to my actions. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. And I got to say, I said this a long time ago, I continue to be interested in seeing where they take the whole notion of sync from here. Because it just seems to me, I mean, we talked about how now you can do Yojimbo notes, you know, with missing sync. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch where they go with that. And that to me is one of the most, when you talk about this being a computer on the go, I think not having that need for connectivity all the time is potentially where a lot of it's at.
There's no question there's a lot of room for growth. I think, as you know, here we are, we're really doing a postmortem 4 weeks later, 3 weeks later. And I mean, I think what's become clear is that for what it does it very well. And I don't see a lot of people who are unhappy with it. In fact, a study just published said something like 91% of iPhone users were satisfied. I mean, very high satisfaction rate.
I'd say that there's definitely a ton of stuff that you know, jumps into my head of things that I want to see, but it's still the best phone I've ever had.
Yeah, well, and that's not saying much because most phones are crappy. But yeah. People ask me, are you going to go back to your N95? And as the N95 has so many more features: GPS, 5-megapixel camera, video shooting, voice recording, voice dialing. I mean, on and on and on. And yet, no, I'm not going to go back.
I wasn't going to mention this one post because it has the S word in it. But right now, the most popular post on Dig in the Apple section is from Maddox, the funny man, best page in the universe guy. And the title of the post is "The iPhone is a piece of something, and so is your face." And it's had 12,000 digs so far. And he goes in and he's trying to do a head to head with the Nokia E70.
That's cool. That is a very nice smartphone.
Looks, and like, you know, he's taking the mickey out of people here with this, but it is kind of fun. And I got to tell you, I didn't know the Nokia, that this model could actually do all this.
Can't get it in the U.S., but it is a very nice phone.
Well, I wonder though. I mean, you look at that and the idea. So my friends who have this, of course, like you, they all uniformly love it. And they tell everybody how much they love it. But the pieces that are definitely missing, the keyboard does keep coming up along with Edge.
Yes.
As something that I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do to improve that. That idea of having a modal punctuation seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, punctuation should not be a separate key press away. That's
cool. at least a couple of the apostrophe and the period and stuff like that. But I do have to admit, I'm now typing faster than on my Trio.
Yeah,
I'm definitely typing.
According to USA Today, in a study actually performed by who did this? I don't see. But anyway, 90% of 200 owners say extremely or very satisfied. 85% extremely or very likely to recommend, paid for by Interpre of Santa Monica, California. They surveyed 1,000 cell phone users.
And what I would desperately have loved to seen was a survey of Trio 650 owners right alongside.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be as high.
Number of people who love their phone, 4.
Don't you think, though? Well, no, a lot of Trio users.
I like my Palm a lot. Yeah. I really do.
But I think the world is rapidly polarizing very dramatically between iPhone lovers and iPhone haters.
And most of the haters are hating because they just can't be caught dead loving
something. I think people are really sick of it.
I so disagree with that, Scott. It's a freaking phone. It's nice. It's a really nice phone. But not everybody needs that particular phone. I know a lot of people who are like sales people, and the idea of having that kind of a keyboard for typing is making them like lose their mind.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, I'm terrible at this. Interesting. What if you had to predict what in particular this is going to cause other companies to change and to do differently?
Oh, you're already seeing response from many other cell phone companies. Touch screens.
Well, you think touch screen?
Yeah.
Today, RIM announced a device that, let's see, works only on Edge and Wi-Fi, yet for some reason, I did not hear an outcry from all the haters about, oh, this is a deal breaker. This phone won't work.
I'll tell you one thing, though, and there's a good reason for that, which is that the BlackBerry is really an email device, and that's much more lightweight. I never had a problem with my BlackBerry on Edge. It's only when you start surfing graphical websites or trying to download YouTube videos that you really say, whoa, this is not going to work. But the BlackBerry on Edge, I used an 8700 on AT&T until I got the iPhone, was fine. Because the email is Edge is plenty of speed for push email.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other thing is that I don't know if it's still the case, but there's still been this case related to 3G where you can't bring new phones in that are using 3G because of the Broadcom.
There's an injunction.
Oh, it's so the lawsuit, yeah.
They literally can't release a new phone that's 3G in the U.S. until that gets handled.
Well, that would explain
it. If it wasn't shipping June 7th, nothing's coming in until that gets sorted out.
Apple was prescient back in January or whenever they made the deal. An anonymous blogger claims, I hate these, proof of concept Mac worm. Oh, my goodness. It makes it possible to remotely inject code with root privilege. However, it compromises its first system, places a text file on a desktop with specific contents, then moves on attempting to compromise other systems on the same network. In other words, it's a WAN worm, not a LAN, or a LAN worm, not a WAN worm.
If we could only take the misguided youth and apply them to solving problems like cancer.
Well, he said he'd be to-do list. Happy to show Apple the what's actually going on if the correct payment was handled.
So it's really he asked for money? Did he really? That's ridiculous.
I don't have it sitting right in front of me, but that was one of the pieces of the puzzle. So
I don't think I have to. I've said this before, and I kind of changed my tune on Apple security after Safari 3 came out and within hours was hacked. I think it's pretty clear by now that there are lots of flaws on the Apple platform, that we are protected by dint of, you know, some good choices in terms of the use of access control in Unix, but more so by the fact that it's an obscure platform that hackers just haven't tried to attack and don't have the tools for. I don't think any Mac user should at this point be going around boasting about how secure their platform is.
No, but I am happy about the fact that I don't have to spend all day working against the spyware, the malware, and everything else I'd find on a Windows
machine. For whatever reason, you're happy about it. But I
don't care what the reason
is. Yeah, we shouldn't be cocky is what I'm saying. And we certainly should be vigilant, because I think there will come a time when there's a nasty exploit and Mac users get bit.
I think we're actually in line to get bit a lot harder, because if you're a Windows user, and I mean a lot of my friends who are Windows users don't have these problems because they are vigilant.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, I for one have become very probably almost lazy. I mean, I'm very careful about things like firewalls and stuff like that, and trying to keep everything locked down that I can. But I'm not, if I were on Windows, I would never be clicking attachments and stuff like that. But I'm so much less aware of that as a Mac user that I think there's an opportunity there. I might just be speaking for myself, but that's my opinion. We are kind of cocky about it, most of us. We haven't had the problem for years.
Well, I have to. In the production environment, when we were working on a project for VH1, it was so funny. We had all these PCs we had to use, and literally, if a PC touched the internet, we had one intern that plugged the PC into the outside world. We literally removed the PC flattened it with a ghost image.
Oh, please. That's just silly.
Well, we couldn't afford. The thing is if anything spread across the system, we would, we were on a tight deadline, and it was going to be a bad...
That's kind of... Well, all right. But I've been running PCs for... I haven't had a spyware infestation or a virus in years, and I've been running PCs on the network for all that time.
I hadn't finished my point yet.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Point was that it was funny that we were so cavalier about our Mac and so paranoid about the PC, because we don't use the PCs very often. It's just that there's this terror, like, we don't even know what to do. I don't even know what to do to keep my PC secure, because I've never had to do that before. I don't know what sites I'm not supposed to go to or what I'm not supposed to click on. All that stuff. I think that is where, if something happens, there's this complete blind spot for Mac users, because I don't even know what to think about it anymore, because it never occurs to me that I have to really think about it much at all.
Yeah. Well, that's the point, I guess. Yes. We're complacent, and maybe we shouldn't be so. But so far, nothing. You'll believe me, if there's a big problem, you'll hear about it on this podcast and on the entire Twit network.
Or you might not hear about it for a little while as we...
Figure out how to get back online, right? Hey, this is a cool link. It's in mbwideas.com. I don't know if these are real or not, but Mac designs from the 80s. Have you looked at that yet, guys?
Is this the alternate, the designs they didn't use, supposedly?
Supposedly. I can't tell. I think it's an art joke, but I can't tell. I want you guys to look at it, because I can't quite figure it out. I'll read you the story, and you can. It's somebody. Let me see who gave us this lead.
Is this the one with the
MacAppa? Yeah, it's the one with the phone. It's from Futter.de. Here's the story. In late June, the iPhone hit the U.S. market. Apple aficionados queued for days to get it. But Futter employee, I think this is a joke, Mark Esslinger is an Apple fan as well, also because he has a very special relationship to Apple. His father, Hartmut Esslinger, this has got to be a joke. Now that I'm reading it out loud, designed the famous Apple IIc, which was Apple's first portable computer and a great computer. We remember that well. Futter presents Mark's personal Apple story and a photo gallery with partly never-before-seen Apple designs of the early 80s. The first iPhone from 83, which... Do you think these are real or what?
I don't think so.
They're great, though. It's a very funny article.
Well, they look... I mean, what's neat about it is it looks like authentic for that time.
You know, here's how I would believe it. If there were some conceptual drawings of a yellow iPod with Beatles music on it.
Oh, we got to talk about that.
then I would think it's real.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Merlin, this is you are now in the echo chamber of fame.
We're enjoying the second wave of BS.
So Merlin, as a joke, I think, created a Mac rumor on this very show some time ago. That there would be a Strawberry Fields iPod with the Beatles music on it. I think we collaborated, all of us. We helped to build it up.
You carried a lot of the water into something like a real rumor instead of just my speculation.
I said it's got to happen. It's too true to not be true. I mean, it's too perfect.
I have to admit, that's kind of how I felt. As the words were coming out of my mouth, I had this mix of like thinking, oh, God, why am I even saying this? This is so, and at the same time going, you know.
It's not a bad idea.
It's kind of a good idea.
It's a great idea. And who knows? It might have been on the drawing board, and then Apple Corps just didn't get it together because we still don't have Beatles music on iTunes. Maybe it's lurking somewhere in the vaults in Cupertino. But it was a great idea, picked up as a true rumor and published by many Apple rumor sites, even though we were just talking out of our tookuses.
And you know, who needs a fake Steve Jobs when you've got a real Merlin Mann?
I agree. So, the rumor's back, only now, instead of a Strawberry Fields Forever iPod, it's a yellow submarine iPod. Although you might have mentioned a yellow
submarine. I think I might have said yellow submarine. But
He did.
So yeah. It's the same exact rumor.
Yeah.
It's version 2.0.
It's really I think it says a lot about where Mac rumors come from.
I think it's a very important...
It's a testament.
A very important lesson we have all learned here. You just can't trust it.
I think if it turns out that there is a yellow iPod, a yellow submarine iPod, I think we're going to cease to call Merlin and start to call him the Oracle.
The Oracle. We'll call you but we'll call him the Oracle.
If they put out a yellow submarine iPod, I think Scott should buy me an iPhone. No question.
Yes.
I'd prefer a Strawberry Fields iPod, frankly.
Oh, Scott agrees.
I agree. If they do should get an iPhone.
You're playing lawyer ball.
Should.
I don't. What's the point of this discussion? They're not going to do it.
You don't think so?
No. Oh. No, but you know, I agree with you. I would prefer a Strawberry Fields version.
Yeah, the yellow submarine was kind of a clunker.
I am the walrus iPod with yellow matter custard on it.
Do we think we're going to get a phoneless iPod soon? Or do you think we're going to wait until the end of the year? Or do you think we're ever going to see one?
My prediction, never.
Really?
I think Apple's new... I'm thinking this as I go along. But I think Apple's new plan is to move us not to have two product lines, but to move the iPod to the iPhone.
I actually agree with Leo.
I don't think they're going to ever do a phoneless iPod with that interface. I think the goal is to get you all using an iPhone.
I do admit, I have my video iPod with me because it still has a lot more storage. And it really frustrates me to watch videos on it now. It's very sad.
Yeah, I spent the last week traveling. Put a lot of TV on my iPhone and watched it, listened to a lot of audiobooks. It is a great iPod. I mean, it really is. And it's a shame that I don't, you know, here's the only problem is that you're never going to buy an iPhone if you don't want to go to AT&T or you're a kid or whatever. So there is a negative to that. I mean, they would sell a lot more iPods if they'd move this technology over there. But I really think I get the feeling that Apple is leaving the iPod behind and moving in that phone direction.
Well, and I don't think that's going to be an overnight thing. I think that's a long scale line when you look at it, because they got too much money coming in on iPods.
That's true.
To just
they
quit
can't.
Making them. They're not going to quit making iPods. I think they're going to slow down their R&D on iPods and look at moving.
But would
most
you buy
of that.
A new iPod with of the old, you know, old form factor, knowing that this potentially exists?
Not, I wouldn't.
No, you're going to wait.
Well, here's the other question: is that if Apple has a deal with this iPhone, if they release another iPhone, or is it still tied to AT&T? Is it all phones that Apple makes, or just the phone that they released?
Ah, that's interesting. So we've heard quite a bit about the 5-year deal with AT&T, but maybe they could make a phone that's not AT&T.
I'd be shocked if that happened. And what would your choices be? Be T-Mobile.
You got to be GSM, right?
Yeah, you got to be.
And they only have Edge, too.
Yeah, so, you know,
what's
it's
the point?
Like, from what I hear, you're worse off that way than you'd be with AT&T.
Now, the other question is there anything related to the iPhone with the Google looking at frequencies? Have you seen that?
No, what's that?
Google is looking at, you know, they're going to auction off channel 52 to 64.
Oh, this is part of the bandwidth auctions of the spectrum that was freed by the television stations, right?
Right.
So when they moved everybody to digital TV, part of the reason was to release spectrum below 700 megahertz. Which is currently occupied at television stations, because that's prime bandwidth. It goes through walls, goes through buildings. You know, you can watch your TV via antenna almost anywhere. Those frequencies right. would be great for some sort of wireless. So you think Google will bid? Google certainly could afford
Google,
to.
Google is talking to. I mean, Google. Well, Google's making a bunch of different.
If I were Google, I absolutely would do that.
Yeah. So because that could obviously very, very much affect the whole process.
Then what do they do with it?
Well,
make a Google phone.
You know, I think that what they're looking at, I mean, the question is whether we really call it a phone anymore. I mean,
I've got an idea. Okay.
You're talking about data network that does VoIP and everything
right.
else. I mean, why bother?
Exactly. Eliminate cell phones.
Right.
Get in the Google phone business, and it's a VoIP phone
with
just data, Wi-Fi just everywhere.
This is the efficiency. It just becomes a data network. I mean,
And who better to partner with on the hardware than Apple? So there's an interesting rumor we could start, which is an iPhone that doesn't use cell networks at all.
I heard the phone is going to be yellow.
It's going to come with the entire Beatles oeuvre,
including all their movies and outtakes from the Magical Mystery Tour movie.
I'd love to see Google do something like that with or without Apple, because we want to keep competition in the game here. I mean, the danger I see in the iPhone, and this is going to sound weird coming from me, is that it could be too successful. In other words, it would destroy competition and then therefore leave no incentive for Apple to continue to improve it.
So I'm with you on that, absolutely.
I want to see...
Improve the condition of... competition in the marketplace by getting Google involved?
No. That's the problem. Going forward, let's go out 10 years, Google and Apple are dominant.
Well, at least another, I'm just saying another competitor, Merlin.
But who? Microsoft?
But here's the thing that's interesting about what Google's offering is beyond whether they want to buy something in the 700 megahertz auction. One of the things that they're asking for is that both they want to ensure that the new spectrum is offered on an open, non-discriminatory basis and to bring new entrants interested in challenging the curry. So one of the things they want to do is make sure that you can't block people from using your cell network. So it's actually open whether they buy it or not. So the idea is that their proposal is that
Google can afford this. Google's the one company that really could afford this. It's in their interest in preserving net neutrality. Google's already made assays towards local Wi-Fi. They're providing the free Wi-Fi in San Francisco right now.
And they have server farms that equal just about any cell network out there. I mean, they have like 40 of these huge, crazy warehouses of computers that no one knows what they're being used for.
Very interesting.
They said that I think the second largest phone company in Canada has 8, and Google has like 40.
Interesting.
I heard Google's going to buy the vowels.
You can't.
I heard they were really focusing on the O's myself.
I heard O's were going to be a no-brainer. That O's were going to Mountain View end of game, but that they were also looking at AEY and possibly Y. Yeah. So
ooh, boy.
Just Yeah.
Just to put some perspective on the concerns of Google's dominance, though, as I remember a time when a company called Netscape was under the same sort of scrutiny, and everyone said, oh, Netscape's going to take over the world, and now, you know, we know how that worked out.
I don't think we've ever seen anything like Google before, I'll be honest with you.
But I'm just saying it's in the same vein. Be careful about assuming that the companies that are dominant today will be
same thing with IBM. IBM, with its monopoly, totally owned the computing in the 50s and 60s. Then the plug compatibles came along, a few bad court cases, and all of a sudden IBM's an also-ran. Still around, but they're not Microsoft.
Apple just passed them in valuation.
The thing that's interesting about Google is the number of people who they terrify. I wonder. Like, even since Microsoft, I mean, was at Microsoft at the height of its power, did Microsoft have the ability?
No.
And I'm talking, let's talk a serious reach here, okay? We're not talking just about computers and electronic devices. We're talking about getting into the, you know, advertising business. I mean, you just think about all of the companies to whom Google represents some kind of a threat. And it's, I wonder, I mean, has there ever been a company that stands to, even with a glancing blow, knock out so many different industries? It's kind of freaky.
The interesting thing, I think, is how much they, how little they, I mean, I guess they are starting to worry the average individual, but I find that they're not, that they're really worrying these huge companies more than they're worrying lots of the little companies. You know, is these big companies that are comfortable and think that they're ready to go and so on and so forth. And now they're getting, they're, something's coming up the path that's very dangerous.
This is interesting. In a way, I'm rooting for Google, because they're the young upstarts. But I'm also realizing that is a dangerous position. You know, we all really deep in our hearts love Google and want them to succeed, don't you?
Well,
but I'm worried about them now. I'm getting more and more worried about them.
I think that one of the things that's going on is that I always feel like Microsoft is kind of, you know, it kind of runs itself and it's not in no certain direction. Like they're big and
they're so bad at everything that they do that I'm not afraid of them. Google is so hyper competent.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's the same thing with Apple. It was kind of like if Apple, you know, what Apple would do if it had none. I'm very happy with Apple having 15.
Apple would shoot itself in the foot too if it had big market share too. I'm not as afraid of Apple as I am of Google. I'll tell you, Apple is actually being hurt right now by Google because Google is sucking all the air out of Silicon Valley. One of the issues, you know, we've talked a lot about Apple's decision to put out the iPhone and delay Leopard. And, you know, I said, well, don't they have enough talent? Well, apparently they don't. Apple's response to that is there's only so many Bill Atkinsons in the world. There's only so many Tiger Woods. The superstar programmers are few and far between. And Google is sucking them up.
Yeah, they do have a bus that just sort of seems to troll around downtown San Francisco, and the guy sticks a sign in the window and says, "Can you program?"
Yeah. Well, if you were now really, I'm not going to include you, Scott, because we know where you'd go. But for the rest of you, if you were a hot shot programmer just out of school and you were being wooed by Google and wooed by Apple, wouldn't you go to Google?
It depends. I think one thing also is their stock price is so high that. You know, I think a lot of, I don't know a lot about this stuff, but I'm guessing that for a lot of people, it's, you know, you got to wonder, can that keep going up and up and up?
But I also think that, there's a personality thing. I've been to both campuses.
It's a great campus. You got to love the Google campus.
The Google campus is great. The Apple campus is great. The Google campus, though, there's a big difference in the kind of people that work at both companies. It really seems to be, you know, because Apple is very, you know, it wraps around one person, you know, and it really is. Everyone's thinking about what would Steve do in this situation.
Yeah, you don't see the same thing with Larry and Sergey. They don't go, "What would Larry do?"
Right, exactly. And they actually encourage a lot of people to be very independent. So it's a different kind of programmer. It's a different kind of, and to be honest with you, a lot of the really good kind of high energy programmers like to be in that situation where they're, you know, where they get to do extra things in their own pieces, and they get to make their own cappuccino. They have their own cappuccino machine. They have like 10 of them in one little area, and then. You know, they have really good lunches that you don't have to pay.
You know, there's people like to be managed in different ways. I know this for a fact. And there are some people who, believe it or not, do gravitate to, you know, sort of like the the Darth Vader boss, like Steve Jobs, and you know,
who?
You know, look at the numbers that came out today. I mean, Apple sold almost 1 million Macs in the quarter.
Wow.
They had a huge bump over the last quarter. They are seen as a cool company. They're going to continue to attract talent and the kind of talent that wants to work in that environment. Whereas there are people who are more laid back. They're going to prefer Google. And right. then, you know, Microsoft can be bad at everything at once. Its cash on hand in the bank is so great that right. it can live off of the interest for 100 years.
But who wants to live in Redmond and who wants to go up there and work for the evil empire? I think Microsoft's the one that's in deepest trouble when this comes.
What I was about to say. They would be in a lot of trouble except for the fact that they literally, you know, own the U.S. Mint.
Yeah,
so.
But they're coasting. They're coasting on their dominance with Windows. They're coasting on...
Well, there's a lot of things also. I think also the thing about Microsoft is that they, even though that there's a lot of stuff that we hear about in the main... the main part of what Microsoft's doing, there's a lot of these little groups within Microsoft that pretty much have almost complete autonomy. And they're kind of working on their, you know, on the like the HD photo group. We had Bill Crow on This Week in Media, you know, a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, I guess now. And you know, they just kind of work on their own stuff and they get no input from anyone else. They're just kind of fiddling around. I mean, a little bit, but I mean, mostly they're just playing with their, you know, and the PhotoSynth guys, they're just sitting there playing with all of this stuff.
Hi, Jane.
And for them, it's a great experience. There's not really, I mean, they get to just be, you know, be passionate about what they're doing. So, I mean, I think there are chunks of things that attract people. I think that, you know, to even to Microsoft to do that kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, it really is. I think you're right. I think there's a definitely what Scott was talking about, that, you know, a different feel, because the people who work at Apple, you find that they tend to be quieter. They tend to be very, very competent at what they do. They tend to be very controlled about what they do, you know, and that's what they, you know, that's the way they like it. And you definitely don't know if they would even fit in at Google.
Right.
In the same way, Google, there's a lot of people there that wouldn't, you know.
I'd love to hear from people who are Apple. Making this choice between Apple and Google and why they would choose one over the other. You're right. I mean, certainly not everybody's going to choose Google or everybody's going to choose Apple, but I am hearing that Apple's complaining that there's this kind of downhill slope towards Mountain View.
Well, I think it's hard to play as hard as Google is. I mean, Google is just, I mean, they just spend an enormous amount of energy, you know, because they just need as many engineers as they can find,
right.
you know, and so it is really, you know, it's the sucking sound isn't just in Silicon Valley. It's all over the country. It's all over the
doesn't
world.
Doesn't Kendra Aramoto work for Google in recruiting?
She does.
Yeah. We should ask
her. And I hear that they're paying out some pretty hefty bonuses.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wonder if they need any podcasters.
Yeah. Yeah, let's all just sell out and go to work at Google.
I'd work at Google. Free lunch and dinner. And they do your dry cleaning. Yeah, good free lunch. Food's always
good.
They have doggy daycare.
I'm just curious of one thing. I think one thing that's kind of interesting is to think about the opportunities for stuff that maybe aren't as easy for a big Google to go after. I was talking to a friend of mine at lunch today about the power of having like a community, for example, and how having a site that's based around some really ardent users is not something you can create overnight, and it's something you can't force. And that's just one example. But I think it's interesting to think about, you know, I mean, in some ways it seems like there's such a lack of innovation going on at these big companies. They're always chasing everybody else, like, oh gosh, why didn't we make YouTube first? Or why didn't we, you know, come up with, you know, Yahoo Groups first or whatever. And I just like to think about where are the opportunities right now? Because I think there's still a lot of room for entrepreneurship out there. There are a lot of people who have a very entrepreneurial personality, don't want to work at Google or Apple. And I think it's just interesting to see where can they kind of hit them where they ain't.
Well, and that's true. I mean, Web 2.0, there's more genius going on in Web 2.0 than either Google or Apple. I mean,
and with Google's buying cycle, you can hit them where they ain't as a small company and work at Google down the road.
I wonder if being in a company that big, as powerful and as resource heavy as they are, I wonder if that really is conducive to the kind of entrepreneurial mindset that you need to create something like a great community site or to create a really rapidly iterating feature heavy site. Because you can eat somebody's lunch if you've got three hardworking Ruby programmers. You know what I mean? You can move really quickly.
Yeah, at the same time, it's hard to hold on because there's the next big thing, the next big thing, the next big thing.
And the scaling issues of all that stuff. Yeah. But I don't know. I always think that's kind of interesting to think about. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that Google could, you know, kind of just poop out in an afternoon that could destroy a lot of companies if they chose to, probably. But I think there's still a lot of room for innovation for the world.
I just look at something like, I mean, I know, like, I've said this before, but, you know, my addiction, you know, every morning when I wake up, the thing that I do that gets my brain going is I play Desktop Tower Defense.
And I saw this. You're still doing that?
Totally addictive.
I'm like half awake.
Just
and I
thank
sit there
God
and
it's not on the iPhone. That's all you should do is thank God.
Oh my God. Well, no. It got to a point where I'm only allowed to play it in the morning, one game in the morning, one game at night, and that's it.
Oh, that's
I'm not allowed to play anymore. I just don't allow myself to, because otherwise I can literally sit there for 4 hours. You know, and the thing is this guy, it's one guy working on this little thing, just kind of putting stuff together, and he's making a reasonable living and he's doing his thing. And it just amazes me because there's all these really expensive games and there's all this other stuff. And that's my favorite game. I mean, I love playing this one little game, and I'm very, you know, I get very passionate about that single
thing. That's totally an independent success story though. I mean, unbelievably so.
I had an interesting epiphany. I was walking through the lobby of the Venetian Hotel in Las Vegas yesterday. And I was looking around, I was thinking about how much money goes into casinos and what a big business that is. I mean, it's huge. And I realized, really, whatever you think about it, and it's pretty tawdry and cheesy, but people vote. They vote with their feet. They vote with their dollars. The reason casinos do well is because casinos give people what they want, and they flock to it. And I realized that really all you have to do is make something people love and really want, and you'll do fine, whether it's a simple little flash app like Desktop Tower Defense, or it's a podcast, or it's an iPhone. I mean, it helps to have a big corporation behind you if you're in manufacturing or building a casino, but there are ways to make things people love very cheaply now.
Cheaply. The whole notion that just because something's big and successful now, it's automatically evil is something that I really find hard to grasp. Everybody I know wants to be rich, and yet, then once they get rich, everybody says, oh, they're evil. And everybody wants to be successful, and yet when they find successful companies or people, they question their motives. I don't understand it at all, and I don't think you need to worry about it.
Part of the reason is we've seen so many companies, big companies, act very evilly.
But the thing is that, you know, we got the capitalistic system works. And I use the analogy of Netscape. You talked about IBM, Leo. I mean, all these companies we're talking about today, 10 years from now, who knows if they'll even exist.
Yeah.
There's the Merlin Manns out there in the world who are independent and probably going to stay that way no matter how much money folks offer them. There's always going to be somebody doing something innovative somewhere with an opportunity to be the next guy that starts, you know, a big company like Microsoft with three people sitting at a table in a diner. I'm not too worried about it.
I was reading Jeff Hawkins' book on intelligence, which, by the way, I highly recommend. And one of the things he said, and he's the guy who founded Palm and then Handspring, certainly has some experience with successful companies. He said the trick is, you know, you've got to figure out what the next thing is and be there at the right time. And he, of course, in his opinion, the next big thing is these hierarchical memories, duplicating brain function, and the new artificial intelligence. And that's what the book's about. Highly recommend it. But I think that that's true.
On intelligence.
Oh, you've got to read it if you haven't read it.
It's good. I've been kind of working my way through it.
It's brilliant. But anyway,
it's like Wayne Gretzky said, I don't want to skate where the puck is. I want to skate where the puck's going to be.
Wayne Gretzky and Steve Jobs said that.
Yeah.
I look at podcasting. I feel like that's kind of what's going on with podcasting. I think that there are plenty of opportunities for small companies to suddenly be the next big thing.
That's another great example of exactly what I was talking about, though, which is that, you know, Google could decide tomorrow, and I'm not trying to bag on Google. I love Google, but, you know, they could decide tomorrow, okay, well, we're going to totally destroy this podcasting space. And what are they going to do? They're going to create some kind of robot that engineers are going to make.
You're right.
There's still, I mean, like the X factor in all this stuff is talent, interest, and community.
Right.
And so but it's so interesting to me, though, that no matter how big your company gets with a lot of this stuff, I mean, sure, you can, if you own a huge piece of the software space, you can force something down people's throats. But you're right. People are discerning, and they put a lot of their own identity in the decisions that they make about this stuff. And so that's just another one of these areas, though, where it's really up to the people to decide whether that's going to be something that they're interested in. You know, that's what Web 2.0 is all about, is, you know, that voting with their feet that people are doing.
Right.
Do you think there was a time when Microsoft was doing what you described? Do you think there was a time when they were like, where people were like, yes, Microsoft.
Absolutely.
And that was for Word.
And Windows. Don't forget. I mean,
Windows 3?
I mean, Macintosh was out there, and a small portion of the audience got GUIs and got menus and got mice in 84 when Apple did it. But it wasn't until the late 80s, the early 90s, when Microsoft put these same technologies into PCs in the business that they took off. And I tell you, with Windows 3.0, 3.1, 95 in particular, People loved Microsoft. I think you speak, there are a lot of people still love Microsoft, kind of based on the success in those days. Yeah.
And don't forget the Brown Zune.
We're trying to forget that.
Talk about a segue. Did you see did you see the iPhone case?
That makes it look like a Zune?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want it. Where do you get it?
It's an anti-theft case.
The new iPhone anti-theft device. So who makes that?
Let's go to hideapod.com. One word.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You love your iPod. It's a great product. You take it everywhere and you use it every day, but owning a device so desirable and fashionable as an iPod comes with one major drawback.
It goes in a Zune case. Yeah. That's brilliant. And you can get an... Is this a joke?
I don't know. I think...
$29.95.
I'm going to buy one.
It's a joke that might make a lot of money.
Holy cow.
Poor Zune.
That is the funniest thing. Talk about an indictment.
I'm clicking buy now as we speak.
So we'll know. We'll know how well it fits soon.
I would love to know how the iPhone one works. Pop your iPhone inside for instant protection.
It's got to be a joke. I click buy now and it's giving me a bunch of errors.
Oh yeah, see, it has an optional squirt module. So the Zune can wirelessly squirt tunes to other Zunes. It's not like there are any other Zune users to share songs with anyway. But we still don't want iPod owners to be left out or intimidated. That's why we developed the optional squirt feature. Simply slide the squirt module into your hide-a-pod, then fill the small tank with liquid. Now you're ready for hours of wireless fun. Press and hold the Zune's play button and squirt away. Take that, you iPod haters. Yeah, it's a joke, but you can get a t-shirt.
I would definitely buy it if you could buy it.
You could buy the t-shirt. Cafe Press. Hide-a-pod. I love it.
That's one of your best ever finds on this show, Merlin.
Well, it's like the number two Apple link on Dig, so I think a lot of folks have seen it. It's worth mentioning. I knew you joined me in my sadness about the state of the Zune.
How do you guys come down on the Mac heist thing? You know, there's both pros and cons on this. And there's a Mac heist going on right now that's kind of amazing. So you get
attention to it, I have to admit.
Well, the idea, and by the way, there's one day left. So if you're hearing this on the 18th, you have till midnight on the 19th to get this thing. They've sold 10,000 bundles. Do you remember this when they did this before?
I do.
And there was criticism. I think John Gruber, among others, critical of the idea that the shareware authors are getting so little and these guys are making so much money, yet they're apparently not having difficulty getting shareware authors to participate. This the new bundle's $50. You get 15 apps, including Tech Tool Pro, Little Snitch. I mean, a lot of stuff that you would want. Fetch, which is not the best anymore, but still, it's $50 for all of that stuff. I guess I'm giving them a plug here. I don't know how. I mean, hey, if the shareware authors go for it, what's wrong with that?
I think I'd want to negotiate a percentage if I were going to do
that.
And
apparently, that was part of the complaint, is that you couldn't, they was kind of a take it or leave it flat amount.
I'll just say, I don't want to get too involved, but I will just say that I love Little Snitch.
And you get cocktail. Well, listen, what you get. You get
cocktail's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Garage Sale, Cocktail, Procast, Amadeus Pro, which is by itself $40. You get Fetch.
That's what I use for podcasts.
Yep. Graphic Converter. You get Little Snitch, which is also great. I mean, these are a lot of things we've recommended. Write Room, Browse Back, which is kind of handy. This is all for $50. I mean,
if it's legit, it sounds like a heck of a deal, because those are a lot of the programs that we all use.
Yeah, we've recommended a lot of these. Now, there's no way you'll get a full Tech 2. That's kind of the issue, is do you get
that's what I want to know right there.
No, I don't think there's – I think that part of it isn't that suspicious. You get – like I think generally, well, I think part of the thing was there were several things that were a little dicey to some people last time. You know, there was
Deal on Tech Tool. It will be unlocked for all customers once
when you get certain number
5,999 bundles have been sold. But I think they've sold more than that.
Yeah.
See, the whole thing's just, you know, it makes me feel like, you know, a guy trying to sell me a used car who's wearing a white belt and plastic shoes.
Well, you know, I think, let me just see what the number is. I think, I see, they have a little bar on here with the unlocking things. Yeah, they got, they're all unlocked now because they've sold 10,000. I think the thing to do is wait. You get a Flow Beta. That's pretty cool. Flow's cool. We've talked about that, right? Pixelmator? Beta?
This makes me wonder if it isn't one of these things like when you went to the fair as a kid and they talked about the two-headed man inside the tent for only a quarter. You know, it's like,
I know. I'm always suspicious. I'll tell you what.
Scott, come over to my house. I'll show you the two-headed
I'm going
to
do it
right
now.
Yeah.
I'll do it right now, and I'll report back to you. It's $50. I mean, I've paid for a lot of this already, but there's enough still.
Good stuff.
Well, let us know. Let us know, Leo. Next week, we'll get a report from Leo, and we'll...
Yeah,
whether it was working.
Yeah, here's an interesting story.
We're screwed or not? We should have bought it.
Here's an interesting story. Speaking of screwed, from Duke University, they say, "Did you see this? There are 150 iPhones registered on the campus network, and it's bringing the Duke Wi-Fi down, baby."
Yeah,
something about the iPhone. Now, well, the professor of computer science Ashok Agrawala says, or speculates, that it's something to do with Duke's network as well as the iPhone. He says he thinks the phones could be struggling to regain the Wi-Fi connection during handoffs, and that's sending a lot of traffic. They haven't figured this out. A spokesman at Duke said an analysis of traffic found that iPhones flooded parts of the campus wireless network with access requests, freezing parts of the system for 10 minutes at a time. But there's only 100 to 150 iPhones.
Well, there were 300 and some odd iPhones at Adobe's headquarters during the iPhone dev camp, and they were able to handle the load.
Yeah, I'm wondering. There's some configuration issue at Duke.
Yeah, somebody's fixed something over there. Have you seen this? Apple's granted the patent for user portability.
What's
yes,
that?
You're going to take a user and be able to transport them portably.
Through the iPhone.
Yeah.
This is that.
So you point that little camera at yourself, and it looks like Star Trek, and then you're...
What? What are you talking here? I don't get it.
So Apple has... They applied for a patent that basically allows a multi-user... Both patents discuss a method of creating an account for a multi-user computer, then storing the account information as well as home directory and some of the other... on some type of external device, such as a USB drive or an iPod. OS X would then be modified to search removable storage for user accounts, allowing you to take your storage device to any computer, log in, and have all your data right there. So it's just a matter of refining that idea. A lot of us have played with this idea of moving your user account to your hard drive. So I've tried it. It's cumbersome.
Oh, I get what you're talking about.
So you set up your user account on, like, I'll install a startup, for instance, completely on my hard drive, that I can just log in to any computer, restart it, and set that's my startup drive. But it's really cumbersome. And so the idea is that the computer, when you restarted any computer you had, it would look for an external user. So if I plug my iPhone into my computer, it's going to look for the user account, not the services and everything else, but just the user account. It'll look for it on my iPhone, so I could carry everything around with me and simply lock it in and be myself in whatever Mac I'm at.
That'd be so awesome.
Wow. Yeah, and would you carry all your data on a USB key or something? Or
I think the idea, it wouldn't really work so much. It wouldn't really work as much on the current iPhone, but if you had on a current iPod of 80 gigs or whatever,
yeah, I mean, plenty on there.
That's the size of a lot of our definitely
home directory.
It's definitely larger than my user account.
Wow. Well, you know, you could, I mean, you've been able to do that for a long time with the, I don't know what they call it, but the Apple's had that feature for a long time in OS X, maybe even before then, on school networks. You log into any machine and you get your home directory.
Right. So this is just building it up. I thought it was exciting.
So they want to give away the patent to this so others could do it?
No, I think that the patent just got approved. So I think that the idea is that you'll be able to do it with your Mac and probably not much else.
Oh, so they'll do anything to not improve .Mac, won't they?
Yeah, .Mac should do this.
Jeez. I'm telling you, man, they're leaving so much opportunity on the table by not making .Mac better. It's just, I don't know.
I think they're working on it.
Mm, yeah. Mm,
right. I think we'll see some improvements soon, and if we don't, I can't imagine why people want to continue to support it.
Suckers like me are going to have to, because if you got, I just don't know of a way. There's all of these ways that where you can, like, with, you know, with spit and baling wire, you can like emulate the .Mac. But it's really the simplest way I know of to keep four computers synced up. It's it's just easy. And, you know, that to me is very worthwhile, and I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I can afford to pay that, you know, amount of money. But it would be nice if they would add some other stuff to it. And I guess I keep coming back to this on like a quarterly basis here on the show, but to me they're missing a huge opportunity to make, turn this into like your personal lifestyle hub. You know, throw 50 gigs at people. Turn it into something where you can like take your MP3s with you legally. You know what I mean? I mean, it just seems like this could be the place that keeps you coming back to Mac's website all the time, because that and iTunes is where you do all your stuff.
Right.
Hmm. Maybe we'll see some update. Do we think that we're actually going to see an iMac in the next couple of weeks?
We've been hearing that for a couple of months.
I got an email from somebody saying, could you please buy an iMac? Because everybody's just waiting. And as soon as you buy that, they'll get the new iMac out.
Was there a recent curse of Leo? I saw something in MBA's idea. What's your latest one?
Oh, what was it? It was something I just bought.
August.
Huh?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Oh, I bought a Canon 5D.
The camera. That's right.
Spent a lot of money on it. And they announced the Mark II literally the next day.
The Mark III, you mean.
Whatever. The next one. Now, it's not out yet.
I'm not buying.
But it's pretty clear Canon was waiting and watching, because they did it the very next day. It was like
that's unkind.
You know, I thought it was a joke. I didn't believe it when people said it. I thought, oh, haha, go along with it. But now I'm starting to think it's really true.
You know, Leo, so here's the deal. Well, we probably shouldn't talk about this on air, but you should do some kind of tracer bullet. You should announce, hey, I just bought the new, you know, blah, 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 whatever, some really incredibly costly thing, like maybe a Prius. Announce that you just bought this thing, you paid the sticker price on it, that it's cool because you're really excited, and you know, and then we'll see what happens. Are they just listening? Is it something where you've got some kind
of... No, it's like, karma.
Yeah.
It's karma.
You got some kind of consumer stink on you. It's just you do it wrong. And people pick up on it. It's like they smell it like fear.
They smell it from months away.
Man.
Well, it's not like I'm not happy I bought the 5D, but I did notice it had been out for a couple of years, and I should have thought a little harder before I bought it.
It's a fine camera, Leo.
Hey, can I do a little mini rat hole here? Do you guys have a site that you love for going and comparing not just prices but models on electronics? I've been thinking about getting my DVD player broke, and I've been thinking about getting an HD or Blu-ray, and I have no idea where to begin. And I wouldn't even know what site nowadays.
I usually just go to Amazon. I read the reviews. Amazon carries most everything. They usually have aggressive pricing. And then you could go somewhere like Nextag or PriceWatch.
You do a lot of stuff like that, don't you, Alex? Aren't you a big comparison shopper?
I ask Robert Heron.
No, that's just for HD.
No, I'm not kidding. I asked Robert here.
Well, I'll tell you, I just came back from the Electronic Media Association Confab in Las Vegas. I was just there yesterday. That's the old VSDA, Video Software Dealers. It's where all the people who sell videos, Blockbuster, Netflix, everybody, you know, and they're really trying to push this HD thing. In fact, don't be jealous, but they were selling HD DVD players, Toshiba, to everybody who was at the conference, got an HD DVD player for $100 plus three movies.
Nice.
However, the good news is both HD DVD and Blu-ray are dropping in prices. Now there is a Sony Blu-ray player for $500, which is good. That's the best Blu-ray player. And HD DVD, everybody expects by Christmas will drop to a couple $100.
And if you're looking for deals, Merlin, I go to dealnews.com.
Deal News is great.
They're great for stuff like Blank Media. And I love the blog-like nature of Deal News. It's like, what's the best place we've seen?
And they have individual sites like Deal RAM, which is a really good place to get RAM.
I use Deal Mac a lot.
Yeah, they're still good. I used to get their mailers. You know, you get an email and every day with great Mac prices. You know why I stopped, though? I kept buying shit. It ended up being very costly email to get, because I go, oh, that's the best price I've seen.
That's a good one.
You
didn't stop to consider whether you needed it. You just knew it was the best price you'd seen.
That's pretty much it. Pretty much it. So anyway, I think
thank goodness there's no dealfood.com or else I'd be in trouble.
I'll eat that.
Deal beef.
I'll eat that.
That's right.
My personalized deal beef thread.
Yeah, when are we gonna go back to the Zeppelin place?
Oh, we gotta do another House of Primates.
Leo, I guess you recommended the Zeppelin to someone at the DMT. Well, actually, a friend of mine, that's Andy Sullivan, who's staying here in Philadelphia with, and he said they all went to the Zeppelin room, and They were they had to crawl out.
House of Prime Rib, baby.
House of Prime Rib. Oh my
God. We need another confab there, another get together of the bunch of us.
But no one. I mean, Merlin.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. He's the only one that got seconds.
Seconds.
I have no regard for my own health. And
seconds.
He's the smallest person in the group, and he's the only one to have gotten seconds.
But here's a tip. Don't get the king cut like Scott and I did, because if you get the prince cut, you just go back for seconds, and you get just as much meat.
It's a very modest seconds they give you. It's probably like not more than 3 or 4 ounces.
And you can't get thirds. You can't keep going.
I've never tried.
You know, one ever has in 50 years of operation. No one's yet gone back for thirds at House of Prime Rib.
And if we bring Durbin, let's let him know that he's gonna, you know, he's got to eat like a man.
What, he got fish? I mean, that's just not right. Or what, sir, chicken? What do you order? Chicken? Fish?
I didn't even know we carried fish, sir.
You were very funny, Merlin.
I'm going to put the order in for you.
You were very funny. He said, would you like some Tampax with your fish?
Yeah, that was my favorite line of the deal.
Very funny. And I'm just shocked everyone.
Lift your skirt and order some steak.
That's all right. This is a manly podcast. Full of manly
men. Well, the place has that kind of feel to it. It's got that kind of, you know.
You know what, though? There are few things more attractive than a slender young woman who eats a big piece of meat.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
It's true. I really admire women who grow down some beef. Unapologetically devour a huge
devours
steak.
It, and then afterwards that's lights hot. Up a Lucky.
I think it's totally hot.
That's my kind of woman. Drinks a martini, two or three, has a big piece of meat, then lights up a Lucky. That is a woman.
Oh,
okay, what's next?
I'm so sorry. I don't know what's going on. I've been trying to buy. I think I've paid for this Mac Heist thing like 5 or 6 times now.
You only had to pay $250.
I think
Leo.
So. It keeps saying can't find a matching receipt among your records. I don't know what that means. And I keep going pay. I've paid 4 times now. So I hope I don't get a bill for $400. But I have received a receipt already. My first receipt from garage sale. I don't even know what garage sale is. It sounds like an eBay thing.
That's the eBay thing. It's cool.
Yeah? I was coding. I like the iwascoding.com. Are you sick and tired of creating auctions using eBay's slow website? Have you been waiting patiently for a quality, affordable listing utility for the Mac OS? Here's your deliverance. Well, I'll try that. What should I sell? I know. My Canon 5D.
No, how about you?
How about your cube, Leo?
Oh, the cube. My Nokia N95. I've got a lot of worthless.
I like my cube.
Technologies. You kept your cube?
I kept the cube.
I gave it to a charity auction.
Mm, it's still like a server somewhere in the office. I think it like serves up. It's like a key server for our.
Oh, that'd be good because that's sufficient to do that. You wouldn't want to. You wouldn't serve websites with it. It's only 500 megahertz.
No, it's just like it's a couple hundred people checking in going, can I use this application? That's all it is.
Oh, that's a clever idea. Yeah, I see. You use that for licenses.
We serve up licenses to the Pixel Core because they get all these free software that they
get
access
to. But you
can
only have so many seats that you're allowed to have.
But we only get like 200 seats or 300 seats. And so we have to keep track of it.
That's very clever. Did Ben Durbin do that too?
Ben Durbin did do that.
I forgive him the fish. It's okay to eat fish if you're...
crazy, crazy, intelligent, and talented.
A code monkey. Code monkeys can eat fish.
Superstar.
By the way, I finally listened to your Audible recommendation. In fact, Merlin, get ready because I'm going to put you on the spot for another Audible recommendation. But I finally listened to John Hodgman, Areas of My Expertise. And you mentioned that Joko was on there, but I didn't know how much Joko was part of it.
Yeah, he won't leave.
He's great.
John gives him lots of opportunities to leave.
And he won't leave. The whole book. And then on disc, I think it's 998, he sings his ode to the furry old lobster.
Oh, that's very touching. About when the furry old lobsters were still in Central Park. That is very touching.
Moving. I was in tears on the airplane. People saw me sobbing. So I guess that could be our Audible book, but we've already recommended it. In fact, I recommended it a couple of times now. So
Am I due this
You're
week?
Due. Scott did last one. If you have one, if you don't, I can come up with one. I've got tons of them. But
I have one, too.
You have one? Merlin, do you want to cede to the senator from...
Alex. If it's available on the site, take it.
How about
it is.
We will cede your pass your 10 minutes to the senator named Ben.
Senator from
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Mr. Ben Lindsay.
So let me tell you, Ince guys are sitting here. That's kind of a
how you doing? Do they say that in Pittsburgh? How you doing?
No, it's mostly, hey, how you,
hey, how you doing?
Hey, Yin's guy's going down there. You next. So I'm sitting
here. You want peppers? You want peppers with that Helgi?
I'm sitting here. I'm thinking about the penguins. You know, and the I was penguins. Wondering if Mario Lemieux is going to be selling it. You know, so that's.
I never really. So there's what you're saying is they have Canadian accents in Pittsburgh.
Sometimes the gets in there. We're close to Canada. We're only four hours away.
Yeah.
So
Justine was out here over the weekend.
I know, and I was out here. She's going to be out here over this weekend, isn't she?
Speaking of Pittsburgh, Pittsburghians. Yeah. All right. What's your book, my friend? This is by the way, this podcast brought to you once again by the good folks at Audible.com. They haven't given up yet. They're going to keep advertising on Twit until somebody signs up. Could be you. Audible.com/MacBreak. So this you only get, and this I have to, before you go on, I just have to mention one thing. You only get one credit. So there are some books we've recommended that are two credits. I'm sorry to say, and I'm asking them for more credits. But in the meantime, you get one credit when you sign up Audible.com/MacBreak. If no obligation. If you decide not to stay as a member, just cancel. It'll be no cost to you. You get to keep the book. But what is your book for the day?
My book for the day, actually the one that I've been working my way through, is the that I downloaded, I guess, through the Audible account through iTunes, was Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed.
Oh, I've got this. I've downloaded this, but I haven't listened to it yet.
It is really good.
Same guy who wrote Guns, Germs, and Steals, Jared Diamond.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really gets into. I haven't finished it yet. But the number one, I'm not sure who's actually doing the. I don't think it's him. I think it's
Christopher Murray. Christopher Murray's reading it, or Murray.
And it's really. It just sounds great. It sounds exactly the way it should. But it's easy to listen to. I throw it in the background while I'm doing whatever I'm doing, and it's just this. Oh, I can't. I have to do just about cleaning is about all I can do, or driving, because there's so much data. You know about
so what's
dealing
it about?
With. It's about how societies, it is a lot of us looking at older, ancient societies all the way up to even current societies, but in pockets of how they basically grow, but then also how a lot of times they can fail, largely out of outstripping their resources. If you look at, they were talking about Pitcairn Island and some of the other islands where we came and there was no one there, or the Easter Islands where there's all these huge, something happened there. Something was big. They had these big statues here, but what happened? And it talks about how the societies built up, how they, used up, in those cases used up certain resources. And by the end they were just, completely out of resources.
I like the tagline, how societies choose to fail or succeed. So the implication is there's something they do that determines their success or failure.
So it's as I said, I'm only in part one right now. There's four parts that I downloaded.
It's maybe a two credit book. We'll have to check.
I don't know, but it's worth it if it is, because it's really.
You know what? Just sign up and get the whole darn thing. It's in my library. I can't wait. In fact, it's on my iPhone. Believe it or not,
it's really 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 good. Yeah. And I find it fascinating. That's most of what I tend to be. Read The Economist and Foreign
Affairs. I loved Guns, Germs, and Steel because here's a guy who's very, very smart. It's about history. It's about culture. It's anthropology. But he synthesizes it in unique new ways. And that's what Guns, Germs, and Steel did. I mean, I was a history major in college. I'm fascinated by this stuff. But he comes up with unique interpretations that just make a lot of sense and give you a great insight into why things are the way they are. I just think that's wonderful. I agree with you. And I can't wait to read it. So I'm good. That's moving up on my list. I have so many books. I don't listen to as many as I used to when I commuted, and I have a bigger. My eyes are bigger than my forehead or something, because I have like 20 books that I haven't read yet.
iTunes thing gets really dangerous for me, because when we started talking about the Audible thing, I went, oh, I'll see what's on iTunes with Audible.
You should get a subscription.
I had like four books almost immediately.
Get a subscription. So. It's much more economical. I can't remember what it is, but you pay a monthly fee and you get two books a month or something like that. And it's much more economical if for somebody who reads a lot. And you do, I think.
I read a lot of magazines. I don't,
I got, ADD. And this isn't part of the commercial. Actually, none of this is. The commercial's just coming up when I'm going to say audible.com/MacBreak. But a number of people sent me an email saying, they won't offer Harry Potter the Harry Potter books anymore on Audible. You have to go to iTunes to get them. And I guess the deal is that the publisher of the Harry Potter books wanted a lot of money. Remember, Audible is just a, like a bookstore, and they have the same, you know, they have a, they make deals with the publishers, and they wanted a lot of. I heard, and this is not from Audible, and it may be wrong. I'm gladly corrected, but that Apple was able to offer them that kind of money for the exclusivity. Wow. That, you know, Harry Potter exclusive. It's still from Audible, but it's only through iTunes.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So Apple was able to say, yeah, we'll give you, you know, Apple, for all we know, said, you know, we'll give you the full amount of money.
Because Apple knows it's still a loss leader for, you right. know, listening to Harry Potter on your iPod.
Yeah, they're completely willing to not make money on any of the music right. because they know it's selling hardware, and that's really what they're all about. So if you can only, you know, get it through iTunes, that's good for Apple. So I imagine that's what happened, and Audible just couldn't compete. But plenty of other great books. I mean, it's a really wonderful bookstore. If you want to join Audible, highly recommend it. All you got to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up. And, but you know, do you hear the dogs going crazy?
I do. I hear a tiny dog.
There's several of them. They're not mine. It seems like there's a dog fight going on. Wait a minute.
There's not dogs, but there's kids downstairs where I'm recording.
Is that it?
I'm in a house.
Yeah, I hear the kids. I heard kids earlier, and I thought,
no,
somebody's got children and is not admitting to it.
No. They're downstairs. They're my
none
friends.
None that I know of.
Yes. Nobody that I know of's got kids. I don't know who that might be. You might. I love that line. None that I know of. Where's that from?
I don't know. It sounds kind of got a Bill Murray feeling.
None that I know of. I don't know. It's more to me. It more sounds like something from Blades of Glory or.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a Will Ferrell kind of a thing.
Love Will Ferrell.
Maybe Talladega Nights. None that I know of.
Did you see his follow-up to Baby Landlord?
Yeah, there's a new one.
With the cop?
Is that on Funny or Die as well?
Yeah.
I wonder if Will would sue us if we played just a little bit of it and told everybody to go to Funny or Die.
I think the first one's
the
funniest. I think the Baby Landlord stole the classic.
Fair use, doctor.
It still makes me a little queasy that they're using this kid.
Did you watch the outtakes?
They have outtakes on there now.
Where you can like see them like coaching her. It's adorable. It's so funny.
Here you go.
Hello? Oh.
The landlord. It is pretty funny.
Perlita. We're going to play a game. It's going to be fun.
This is her mommy.
Stand still. Stand still. Oh. And you're going to say, where's the rent? Hey, Pearl. I'll get back here.
It's actually pretty funny.
Pearl, right? Yo, where's the rent? Where's the rent?
Look at Daddy. It must have taken them a year to do this.
I got to get my drink on.
Did they talk about that one in there?
Oh, there's the one where she's walking around with the beer. I think that's what freaked a lot of people out.
Yeah. And it's not Will's kid. It's his partner's kid, right?
It's Adam McKay's kid.
Yeah. And Adam said, next day, she didn't remember any of this stuff. It was just fun. I don't know. People do stuff with their kids. I don't know. I might not do it.
Okay.
It's their kid. They have custody.
So people will dress it up in an I like the Seminoles t-shirt, but like putting it in a hilarious videos like that. Like forcing your child to have political messages on its tiny chest.
That's
on
a
your
good
behalf.
Point. That's right.
That's okay, you know?
Right. I like the Seminoles. All right. I think we're ready for our picks of the week, software or hardware, things that you like, you want everybody to get. I'm going to start because I got an email from a high school student who listens, who's a big fan. And he said, you know, I'd love it if sometime you mentioned my program, which is pretty funny that, I mean, nowadays high school kids are, you know, they've got businesses. And he writes a little program you might have heard of called Dockables. In fact, they just he just won an Apple award for Dockables. Go decorate.
The iPhone apps.
They also do the iPhone apps. Yeah, right. They do an iPhone app. It's called Coco App is the name of this site, cocoapp.com. And Dockables gives you one-click system event access from your OS X dock. So they've got little items that will shut you down, restart, and they're just little, it's free, just little things that go on your dock for things that you might do a lot, which is, I think, it's simple, it's freeware, but I think it's very cool. And this is a high school kid who did it.
It's really useful.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I just love it that now let me find his name because I should give him credit. He said, would you talk about my program? I said, of course I would. I think that's fantastic. He's a regular listener. His name is Corey Bahone. He's a senior in high school. It's now on the top 10 top downloads list on Apple.com. And he says, I'm trying to get my software and my company off the ground. He's also creating some iPhone software at cocoapp.com. So, Corey, there's your little plug. Have you played with his iPhone stuff, Scott? Is that?
You know, we get so many emails about that stuff that we haven't weeded our way through about 10% of it yet. So
There are a lot of apps now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And good sites, and these sites that are cropping up look pretty good.
I like the sites that aggregate the apps and give you an interface onto the iPhone.
Did you see Get Leaflets?
No.
That's a new one.
G-E-T, well, it's a pretty one. G-E-T Leaflets, L-E-A-F-L-E-T-S, getleaflets.com.
Now, if you look at it in Safari on a Mac, does it give you the same look as you'd get an iPhone or no?
I don't think so.
Most of these you have to actually look at them on an iPhone.
Or it senses the iPhone. So this is blue flavor. Leaflets are fun, useful applications designed to run fast. Oh, they've got Upcoming, Flickr, Delicious, Newsvine, Tour de France, the New York Times. That's cool.
Yeah, this is exactly the kind of development I had hoped for. You know,
and at the same time, I feel like it's second class because you have to go to Safari to do it, which drives me crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
These are the kinds of applications that would be so great.
With like a dead, and you should be there should be eventually a point where you know a year or whatever from now where you can have some kind of option key thing you push down. You can move those buttons around. Right. You can change whatever you want.
They'll be like widgets. I think it's the only way to do it. This is cool. They did a nice job, Leaflets. Anyway, Dockables, free, fun, available. Not a big deal. Little thing, but very cool. CocoApp.com. Do you want to make Leaflets your pick, Merlin, or do you have something else?
I got something else.
All right. Merlin can't really do an iPhone pick. That just wouldn't be right.
I get a bad rap.
Should we take bets on how long before Merlin has an iPhone?
Apparently, I'm supposed to buy one any day now.
But, really? Is that what it says?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Then Scott, you can't give him one if we have this bet, so maybe we shouldn't do it.
According to the great goateed masses, I should already be picking one up. I'll tell you what I did do. I finally dropped 1/20th of – actually, it wasn't 1/20th of an Alex. How much was it? Well, I dropped a part of an Alex on that scanner that I was talking about.
Ah, and you're happy with it.
Well, this –
It arrived last week while we were talking.
What scanner is this?
Long story short, Fujitsu makes a really fast scanner. This is not my pick. This is context for my pick. But the ScanSnap S500M is a fully Mac compatible, super fast sheet fed scanner. I'm reading right off the page here. But what does that mean? That means you take a bunch of crap that you need to get into an electronic format, and you throw it at this thing, and it just turns through it crazy fast. And it's very configurable via software. And you can say that, you know, it's for making PDFs, essentially. And so I have this desire to get all my stuff kind of out of paper and onto the Mac. And so it's, you know, backupable and stuff, searchable. So the first step is getting this thing. And so far I'm happy with it. It's a little costly, but I'm enjoying it. I'll tell you what I'm really liking, though, is a program called YEP, Y-E-P.
Oh, yeah.
And YEP, I don't know if we've done YEP before.
No.
You can see YEP at yepthat.com. And it's described somewhere as being like an iTunes interface for PDFs. And it's pretty sharp.
What they're going to have in Leopard, kind of.
I don't know. It could be. You throw all the PDFs on your Mac, really on your whole, I guess, wherever. Throw them at this app. It catalogs all of them. If it's got, you know, if it's a PDF that has, you know, words in it, you can actually have it create tags for you.
Cool.
It'll remember things like when you add things to this, it'll remember what date it went in and so on. It's kind of like, it does a lot of stuff similar to what DevonThink does. It's a little more lightweight and very heavily based on PDFs. There's a bookmarklet for Safari, so if you're on a page and want to turn it into a PDF, it's one click. So I just think it's really, it's pretty neat. I didn't used to be such a big fan of PDFs, but ever since they became so heavily integrated into OS X, I've kind of come around to them, and I just think it's a real neat program. I think it's another one of these programs along the lines of Delicious Library, where I think people are doing some nice work with taking the quality of experience of the core kind of iLife apps and bringing them to these different areas. So
this is part of the Delicious Generation. That's what they're calling these programs now.
It's called YEP. It's at yepthat.com. It's $34, which is 1/20th of an Alex.
That seems expensive for something like this.
Yeah.
You think it's worth it, though?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just getting started with it, but the ability to go in and expose all that to Spotlight is pretty powerful.
Yeah,
to me.
No, you're right.
If you already have, if you have DevonThink Pro Office, one nice thing about I think I've had DevonThink as a pick before. It's a really neat program, but DevonThink actually has built-in OCR. So you can have the scanner like point it straight at DevonThink and do the OCR. I'm still working out the OCR piece. Cool. I'll come back with more on the ScanSnap as I get it kind of tricked out. But
Do you plan to put everything in there, just kind of scan everything?
I mean, for stuff like dealing with financial information, like having all that stuff.
I loved that.
Being able to pull all that stuff out, and then I can just kind of keep a much more...
I'm doing my 2006 taxes right now, and I just wish I had some sort of system like that.
Yeah, I mean, so I have a pretty lo-fi solution right now, which is the first of every month, I start a new manila folder and throw receipts in there.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I don't know if this is going to be the perfect solution, but I have friends that have this, and there's a lot of blog posts out there about this. I'll write more about this on 43 Folders as I go. But you can go out and if you Google on Fujitsu ScanSnap, you'll see some amazing stuff people are doing. One guy I saw who outsources a lot of what he does, a la Tim Ferriss. Outsources stuff to India. He does everything through this. He scans all his stuff.
And just sends it to India.
Yeah, yeah. And it helps a lot with kind of the communication problems. He's like, he's got everything. Like, here's what you need.
And so he's using Indian accountants?
He's using, well, there's like amazing stuff you can do with outsourcing. But
I got to read that book.
It's an interesting book. It's pretty squirrely, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say yep. And I just, in passing, just because I have much love for the Devon crew, DevonThink is also just a fan. DevonThink Pro in particular is a fantastic application for managing lots of.
So we're up to four Merlin picks now. I just want to point out.
What? Yeah, we are in one, four in one. You get your money's worth with this show. Let me tell you.
Is that compatible?
That's
I'm sorry.
Fine.
I did not mean to slip that many.
That's fine. Let's head on to Scott Bourne to see what's next.
Well, I'm surprised no one beat me to this, but first off, want to preface this by saying it is less than an Alex. My pick cost significantly less than an Alex.
Well, that doesn't say much.
Well, I mean, hey.
What is an Alex? $700 now?
$700.
Yeah. So this is $100 less than an Alex.
Okay.
It's a revolutionary new device.
Is this the iPhone?
Change the way things work.
Is this the iPhone?
It has 8 gigabytes of storage.
This is the
iPhone. It allows you to surf the web, listen to music, watch videos, and talk on the phone. It is the iPhone.
You can't pick the iPhone. You've been picking that since October.
Okay. In that case, my pick is G Office for the iPhone.
Oh, what is that? That's the Google Office.
The Office?
It is not Google Office, but the guy was pretty smart to name it G Office because everyone thinks it's Google Office. This is Kevin Warnock's little first ever word processor for the iPhone. It actually works.
Oh, now, yeah. I saw his blog posting, and he was all excited about Scoble seeing it. I remember this.
Yeah, it really does work. Now, if you're looking for, Word, forget it.
I signed up for it. What's cool about it is you don't have to have an account. You just create it, and it saves it.
Yeah, and what's really cool is if you want, they'll actually mail out a hard copy of your document for you.
How much does that cost?
$3.
That's a good deal.
And for $4, they'll put it on bond paper, and if you ask, they'll put a love stamp on it for free.
Aww. So you could write a love note that way.
But you know what? If you just needed to like do a deal memo with somebody, real quick, standing there, hey, let's just agree to terms. They're actually going to come up with some templates he told me about that you can just click what you want in the thing, hit a button.
Oh,
there it is. You both click.
Great idea.
Cool. Yeah. And, hey, it's goffice.com. Give it a look. If you're looking for Word and you're a power Word user, you're not going to like it. But if you're looking for a way to make something on your iPhone you can send to somebody, this works.
And templates would make a big difference in making this functional. If you could just...
And they've got some templates now, which frankly are a little lame, and they know that. They're going to redo those. They keep in mind, this thing's been out 4 weeks.
He developed it at the dev conference, didn't he?
Well, he launched it there. He'd actually been working on it 2 weeks before, but it's an ongoing, evolving product. That's where I talked with him, and that's where I learned about it and tried it. And it really is pretty interesting. I mean, it shows the kind of – I mean, this is not the be-all, end-all word processor for the iPhone, I'm sure, but it's a good start, and it shows the kind of thing that people are probably going to be able to do in the future.
Goffice.
G-Office.
G-Office. Finally, Alex, Ben Lindsay.
So the mine is 1/7 of myself.
1/7 of myself.
It's 1/7 of myself.
This could be for an autobiography.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's. I'm now 1/7 of myself.
Yeah, you write that when you're about 11 years old.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So the this one I actually we showed on the on the lab last week. This is called PF Ho, and it's
pixel. Excuse me.
I know we showed it on the lab.
I said the same thing. I said it's H-O-E.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to understand that they also make PF Shovel, PF Road Grader.
So it's a company called Pixel Farm. And
PF Chang.
And Pixel Farm makes lots of PF Chang, yeah. So they make lots of products that relate for the visual effects industry to what we call match moving. So the idea is that we have a camera move. Let's say we've done a handheld camera move and we want to add something that looks like it's moving exactly the same way as our camera was moving, but you know, we weren't doing anything on the set. We just need to reverse engineer it. We need to look at the pixels and figure out where would the camera have to be to make those pixels do what they're doing. And anyway, so what it does is the reason that this is interesting is that it's $100. And normally a lot of this stuff is like $1,000 and $2,000 and $3,000. It doesn't do, there's the great thing about it is it's really easy to use. You just kind of, it has a little wizard and you put the video in and say, do this, do this, do this. And it just kind of puts it together for you. And for those of you using Final Cut Pro Studio, it's the only tracker right now that exports a motion file. So it actually exports a motion project file that has the camera moving in it, because motion now, you know, supports 3D. And so it is it's a great little tool. It's really easy to use. If you're already using motion and you want to add motion graphics, for instance, wrapping around someone while you're doing a handheld shot, it makes it super simple to kind of throw that stuff together. So it's that's my recommendation for the week. I know you guys do this all day and all the time, but
I don't understand a word he said, but I'm
my
sure
brain is my it's brain all, is melting.
There's all pops and buzzes from
here.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the conclusion, the thrilling conclusion of this episode of the iPhone Mac Break Show.
I can't, because you have an actual Apple phone show at applephoneshow.com.
Leo, I think it's phone tip casting.
Phone tip. The problem is that I think there's actually more iPhone content in this show than there is in the Apple phone show.
Yeah, that's because, you know, we have
an hour and 90 minutes to do this.
We have roughly, you know, smaller bladders over at the Apple phone show than you do at the Mac Break Weekly.
Thank God for the mute button. That's all I'm saying.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I always carry a bottle with me everywhere I go.
Yes, if you want to pick up this conversation, applephoneshow.com. Thank you very much.
Lots of great information. And actually, I subscribe to your feed because the blog has all sorts of good things. Actually, what I really do is I watch you on Jaiku, and all the new articles go up there. And actually, I get a lot of my news from your Jaiku feed.
I'm glad to be of service, sir.
Is that applephoneshow.jaiku.com?
You know, I have no idea. It just
what
works.
Are you? Scott Bourne at Jaiku.com? I can't remember. Anyway, just go on to Jaiku and you'll find Scotty.
Search for me by name. I'm on there.
Yeah, and there's also a very useful Apple or iPhone channel on there, and I subscribe to that. And that you get a lot of good information that way. It's very useful.
I think that's a great use of the Jaiku technology.
I agree. I've spent so much time on Pounce now that I feel like I'm neglecting Jaiku. But thanks to the feed,
I don't know exactly how to use Pounce.
You know, it's like Twitter.
Okay, because I signed up and I was kind of like, okay, now what do I do?
Stuff in there. The thing is, you have your friends. And so if you send stuff to your friends, it just goes to your friends. So like, you're my friend, and Merlin's my friend, and Scott's my friend.
You're my friend.
And then, but you can also send to the public, which is everybody who's following you.
Public's my friend.
The public is your only friend. And then you can also send it in. Because you can control who you send it to. That's okay. One of the big differences. The other difference is that it has file types. So there's messages, which Twitter has, but it also links files. You can upload files. If you're a pro, you can upload to 100 megabytes of files. And also you can have an event type. So it's very useful. People are uploading indie music and stuff, and it's got a little player in there, and you can listen to it. It's kind of cool that way. And then it also has better filtering than Jaiku, which is nice. It has commenting on the posts like Jaiku. Doesn't have RSS like Jaiku. Doesn't have an API yet, but I hear they're getting close.
To me, the RSS at Jaiku is the cool thing.
That, exactly, because, for instance, You put on your RSS feed, the Apple Phone Show. So now I see on your Jaiku feed, I see all your articles as they go up.
Yeah.
It's very handy. And I haven't posted a lot. I've only posted a couple of times on Jaiku in the last 2 days. But every time I upload a podcast or post on Pounce or anything like that, stuff will go up there, which is great.
And you can post to Jaiku from your iPhone.
You can. They have m.jaiku.com, which works on all mobile devices. It's actually a very good mobile interface. Pounce is doing that, too. Everybody should do that. Everybody get in line. It's time to file out. Single file, please. No touching the wax figures because they hold fingerprints. We'll be back at Madame Tussauds Wax Break Weekly next week. Another thrilling, gripping, and heart-stopping edition. We'll see y'all next time. Another Mac Break is broke.